The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
DOJ has announced charges against 34 individuals for blocking access to or vandalizing abortion clinics. And there have been over 81 reported attacks on pregnancy centers, 130 attacks on Catholic churches since the leak of the Dobbs decision, and only two individuals have been charged. So how do you explain this disparity?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, yesterday, Attorney General Merrick Garland was in the hot seat right before the Senate Judiciary Committee. There was an oversight hearing going on. I don't know if you saw any of this or heard any of the clips. I think it was very compelling testimony. And Maggie pulled some great audio for you today. I think what I want to do is give you just a look at what was happening on Capitol Hill. You don't often get a chance to hear this, so I thought I'd give you a seat there in the chamber. Just to give you a quick overview, just to say that certain senators grilled him. That's an understatement, right? They went after him, consistently went after him, about the disparity between the arrest of pro-life protesters and the fact that only two people have been arrested in connection with, what, the 87 attacks on pro-life centers? Maggie and I were talking about this before the show, and she says, you know, Jane's Revenge claimed the majority of those. There have been 130 attacks on Catholic churches across the country. I said to my one producer this morning, I said, you think he is anti-Catholic? And he said, oh, no doubt. Take a look at this. Take a look at the attacks on the church. Take a look at the attacks on the pro-life centers. Why are you coming with 30 armed guards in the middle of the night to take a man out whose attorney, Mark Hoke, I'm talking about, the pro-lifer, whose attorney said, I'll be more than glad to bring him in. And you treat him like he's a drug lord. Crazy. Let me share some audio with you. Senator Mike Lee of Utah, he actually, I thought, was pretty gentle in his approach.
DOJ has announced charges against 34 individuals for blocking access to or vandalizing abortion clinics. And there have been over 81 reported attacks on pregnancy centers, 130 attacks on Catholic churches since the leak of the Dobbs decision, and only two individuals have been charged. So how do you explain this disparity? By reference to anything other than politicization of what's happening there.
The FACE Act applies equally to efforts to damage, blockade clinics, whether whether they are a pregnancy resource center or whether they are an abortion center. It applies equally in both cases, and we apply the law equally. I will say you are quite right. There are many more prosecutions with respect to the blocking of the abortion centers, but that is generally because those actions are taken in, with photography at the time during the daylight, and seeing the person who did it is quite easy. Those who are attacking the pregnancy resources centers, which is a horrid thing to do, are doing this at night in the dark. We have put full resources on this. We have rewards out for this. The Justice Department and the FBI have made outreach to Catholic and other organizations to ask for their help in identifying the people who are doing this. We will prosecute every case against a pregnancy resource center that we can make.
Yeah, only two of them have made so far. Come on. I mean, what's so ridiculous about the statement, you could say whatever you want, a lot of bluster there. 87 attacks on pro-life centers, 87 attacks on them, two arrests, 130 attacks on Catholic churches. Where are the arrests? And yet, look how many citizens are being arrested. And look, pro-lifers and people who go to the traditional mass or just go to Catholic Church in general, they're peaceful people, right? They're peaceful people. You can't make an arrest. Why? Because it's at night. You don't have photography. They can take pictures at night. Come on. It's ridiculous. Absolutely. It's easier we have pictures and camera during the daylight. You're the FBI. You're the Justice Department. Come on. Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, on the other hand, wasn't so gentle. I love Ted Cruz. Boy, he grilled, right? And he's a really, really bright man, Cruz. He's a I'll play what he's doing. He's actually directly accusing the Attorney General of doing nothing to protect Supreme Court justices. I thought this was such a brilliant point. Listen.
But in the wake of the leak of the Dobbs decision, when rioters descended at the homes of six Supreme Court justices, night after night after night, you did nothing. The department did nothing. When extremist groups like Ruth Senas and Jane's Revenge openly organized campaigns of harassment at the homes of justices, you sat on your hands. When these same groups posted online information about where the justices worship, or their home addresses, or where their kids went to school, you again sat on your hands and did nothing. Your failure to act to protect the safety of the justices and their families was an obvious product of political bias. You agree with Roe versus Wade. You disagree with the Dobbs decision. And the Department of Justice under this president was perfectly happy to refuse to enforce the law and allow threats of violence. And as you know, those threats finally materialized with Nicholas Roski, a 26-year-old man from California who traveled across the country, was arrested outside the home of Justice Kavanaugh, armed with a handgun, a knife, and burglary tools. And he said he came there to kill Justice Kavanaugh because he was enraged by the leaked opinion.
It's such a great point. It is so true. You take a look at this. I felt bad for Amy Coney Barrett, for Kavanaugh, for so many of these justices. First of all, that decision got leaked. There was a death threat against the Supreme Court justice, and you see how this was handled, right? I think Cruz's point was right. He's pro-death, pro-abortion, and it's clearly evident in the way that they respond to anybody who holds a pro-life position, whether you are a protester or whether or not you are a Supreme Court justice. He talked about Justice Kavanaugh there. Let me share with you what he had to say about the arrest of sidewalk counselor Mark Houck from Philadelphia. Remember this, right? All those guys storming his home in the middle of the night, his family, his children traumatized, weapons pointed everywhere. And again, I just want to qualify. His attorney said, if you want to talk to him, I'll be more than glad. I'll bring him in. No problem. You don't need to be threatening people and breaking down doors. But here you go. Here's Senator Cruz once again addressing this issue.
We've also seen across the country violent attacks on pregnancy centers by similar left-wing terrorist groups, including one graffiti of a firebomb building said, Jane was here. There have been attacks all over the country. And yet, the Department of Justice has not brought these violent criminals to justice. You contrast that. If you're a violent criminal and you attack a crisis pregnancy center, that is not a priority in the Biden Department of Justice. Contrast that to Mark Houck, who's a pro-life activist. He's a sidewalk counselor. And he had an altercation with someone who allegedly interfered with his son's personal space and threatened his son, and he pushed him. Now, in an ordinary world, pushing someone would be maybe a simple misdemeanor assault, but not under the Biden Department of Justice. If you're a pro-life activist, what can you expect? Well, in this instance, according to Mr. Houck's wife, two dozen agents clad in body armor and ballistic helmets and shields and a battering ram showed up at his house pointing rifles at his family. Why do you send two dozen agents in body armor to arrest a sidewalk counselor who happens to be pro-life, but you don't devote resources to prosecute people who are violently firebombing crisis pregnancy?
It is a priority of the department to prosecute and investigate and find the people who are doing those firebombings. They are doing it at night and in secret. So, and we have found one group, which we did prosecute.
How many have there been? How many attacks?
There have been a lot. And if you have any information specifically as to who those people are,
Did you personally authorize 20 agents going to Mr. Houck's house? And he offered to turn himself in through counsel, but you didn't want that. The Department of Justice wanted to make a show of it. Did you personally authorize it? And do you want to apologize to Mrs. Houck and her seven children for being terrorized?
The decisions about how to do that are made at the level of the FBI agents on scene.
Did you know about it?
I did not know about it until the way you're describing it. And my understanding is the FBI disagrees with that description.
You know, the FBI has gotten such a bruised reputation lately, hasn't it? It's been unbelievable. It really has. But what happened with Mark Houck was absolutely, it was wrong. It really was. And Josh Hawley lays into him about the Senator Hawley is from Missouri. He's another one like Cruz. These guys are brilliant and relentless. Is this the montage, Maggie, of his statements, or is this the one where he accuses the general of animus against Catholics? Which clip do you have here? All right, here he is demanding answers regarding Mark Houck. Listen to this.
Why did the Justice Department do this? Why did you send 20 to 30 SWAT-style agents and a SWAT-style team to this guy's house when everybody else had declined to prosecute and he'd offered to turn himself in? Let's take a look at the hardened criminals that your Justice Department sent these armed agents to go terrorize on that morning. Here they are. Here they are at Mass. Here's the seven children with Mr. Houck and his wife. In this early morning, they were all at home. Mrs. Houck has said repeatedly, the children were screaming. They feared for their lives. What's really interesting to me is this seems to directly contradict your own memorandum about the use of force at the Justice Department. You say officers may use only the force that is objectively reasonable to effectively control an incident. Are you telling me that in your opinion as Attorney General, it was objectively necessary to use 20 or 30 SWAT-style agents with long guns and ballistic shields for these people?
What I'm saying is that decisions about how to go about this were made on the ground by FBI agents.
So you're saying you don't know?
I'm saying what I just said.
Which is that you're abdicating responsibility?
I'm not abdicating responsibility.
Then give me the answer. Do you think, in your opinion, you are the Attorney General of the United States? You are in charge of the Justice Department. And yes, sir, you are responsible. So give me an answer.
The FBI does not agree with your description.
I'm not asking about the FBI. You are the Attorney General. Give me your answer. Do you think that it was objectively reasonable and they followed your guidelines in sending 20 to 30 armed agents to terrorize these people? Yes or no?
The facts I have, which are those presented by the FBI, are not consistent with your description.
So you think it was reasonable?
I'm saying the facts are not as you describe.
What, that the children weren't there? That there weren't long guns there? That there weren't agents? What do you dispute? What's the factual premise you dispute?
FBI
be specific.
FBI said they don't agree with your description of...
Be specific. They don't agree with what?
Of how many agents, of the agents who were there, and of what their roles were. They don't agree.
Apparently, on your watch, this Justice Department is targeting Catholics, targeting people of faith, specifically for their faith views. And Mr. Attorney General, I'll just say to you, it's a disgrace.
And Senator Hawley, good job. I could not agree with you more. It is a disgrace. Here's the thing. You know, the Attorney General should simply say, you know, I'm not quite sure. I know you're saying the account's 30. You know, my report's a little bit different. I think it was a little less or whatever, however he wants to cage it. You know, I'll look into that for you. I'll get back to you. It's all you've got to say. Or just do something even, a little more rational, like say, you know, I'm really sorry about that. If what you are reporting is true, then yeah, I would agree. That's overkill for that situation. I'm going to look into it. I'm going to find out why they decided to send 30 people to this man's house in the middle of the night when he was willing to come in. You know, he's no threat, right? As I think it was Cruz pointed out earlier, but it's a bit simple misdemeanor for pushing somebody, right? You're coming with ballistic shields, long weapons, and you're surrounding the place with 30 officers taking a guy out in chains. Come on, that's ridiculous. That you can understand the optics. You know, it seems very anti-life and anti-Catholic. Senator Hawley went further. He directly accused the Attorney General of animus against Catholics. And here's the thing: I never thought we'd see this. It was a big part of early America, right? And clearly, we saw it in other parts of the world. But the United States of America, where we have this ability to freely exercise our speech and practice our religion, to worship. Do you ever think today, in the year 2023, that Catholics would be persecuted so vividly, so especially by a government institution, it might be somebody or some small group that doesn't like it, but to have a powerful force of the United States government targeting you. Notice how the AG didn't answer the question about how many agents was at the informants in the last house. You heard that. Here's a little bit more from Senator Hawley.
I notice a pattern, though. The FBI field office in Richmond on the 23rd of January of this year issued a memorandum in which they advocated for, and I quote, the exploration of new avenues for tripwire and source development against traditionalist Catholics. It's their language. Including those who favor the Latin Mass. Attorney General, are you cultivating sources and spies in Latin Mass parishes and other Catholic parishes around the country?
No, the Justice Department does not do that. It does not do investigations based on religion. I saw the document you have.
What did you do about
appalling.
It?
It's appalling. I'm in complete agreement with you. I understand that the FBI has withdrawn it, and it's now looking into how this could ever have happened.
How did it happen?
That's what they're looking into. But I'm totally in agreement with you. That document is appalling.
I'll tell you how it happened. This memorandum, which is supposed to be intelligent, cites extensively the Southern Poverty Law Center, which goes on to identify all of these different Catholics as being part of hate groups. Is this how the FBI, under your direction and leadership, is this how they do their intelligence work? They look at left-wing advocacy groups to target Catholics? Is this what's going on? I mean, clearly it is. How is this happening?
The FBI is not targeting Catholics. And as I've said, this is an inappropriate memorandum, and it doesn't reflect the methods that the FBI is supposed to be using. It should not be relying on any single organization without doing its own work.
Now, I know you say that, and I hope you're right. I agree with you. This is appalling. But clearly the FBI was targeting Catholics. I mean, there's no dispute in that. They clearly were. I mean, it sounds like former Soviet Union, USSR stuff, China, spies in churches, right? Checking out who's a Latin Mass going Catholic. Oh my gosh, how horrible, right? I mean, what is it about Catholics that are so violent? What is it about Catholics that are so terroristic? What is it about those who attend this Mass? Is it the fact that, well, they're open to life and that goes against what you believe? That they're pro-family? And that definitely goes against what you believe, that they're pro-life. Are they for country, God and country? And that maybe goes against your belief, because clearly this behavior is not American, right? This is communist. This is socialist. This is oppressive. This should never, ever, we shouldn't even be talking about this in the United States of America. This is something you report about on what's happening in Cuba. Or some former USSR nation, right? Or what's happening in North Korea or China. Not in the great United States of America, home of the brave, right? Where everyone has an inalienable right to life, to liberty, to freedom. Freedom of speech and expression. Senator John Kennedy, who I love. I don't know if you know this guy. He makes me chuckle every time I hear him. He's from Louisiana. He was next in line. He grilled him about the memo he sent out about parents at school board meetings. That's a whole other thing. Let's take the life and the Catholic out for a second. Let's just talk about school board meetings, right? A bunch of parents also being targeted and put on lists. Why? Because they are concerned about what their kids are being taught, how they're being indoctrinated. As parents, we are the primary educators of our kids. We shouldn't be called domestic terrorists. In this clip, the attorney general, he gives a very nice answer. Right, you'll hear that. But a little later on, Senator Kennedy, he presses him even further. Doesn't go well for the country's top law enforcement agent. Check this out.
Thank you, General, for being here. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I read this somewhere. I don't remember who said it, but I wrote it, but I remember it. It was once observed that a parent who stops loving their children... If a parent stops loving their children, the children will not stop loving the parent. The children will stop loving themselves. I know we can agree that we should encourage parents to be involved in their kids' lives.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure we can agree that we should encourage parents to make their kids do their homework.
Yes, although there's sometimes some resistance to that.
Right, right. and to make sure they get sleep at night so they can be ready for school.
Yes.
Here's what I've always been confused about. Didn't you understand the chilling effect that it would have to parents when you issued your directive, when you directed your criminal divisions and your counterterrorism divisions to investigate parents who were angry at school boards and administrators during COVID?
So, Senator, if you'd just give me a moment to put the full context, I did not do that. I did not issue any memorandum directing the investigation of parents who were concerned about their children. Quite to the contrary, the memorandum that you're talking about says at the very beginning of the memorandum that vigorous public debate is protected by the First Amendment. And the kind of concerns that you're talking about are, as expressed by parents, are of course completely protected. The memorandum was aimed at violence and threats of violence against a whole host of school personnel. It was not aimed at parents making complaints to their school board. And it came in the context of a whole series of other kinds of violent threats and violence against other public officials.
It goes on, but for the sake of time, let me just hold it there because I want to play one more clip. We got a full show ahead for you. I want to give you a sense, if you're just joining me, of what happened yesterday when the Attorney General Merrick Garland was grilled. And they covered a lot of territory from school boards to pro-life attacks to anti-Catholicism. It really was engaging. Finally, Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, she had her say, and I'll maybe wrap up this on this point. She grilled him about why isn't there more being done about finding Jane's revenge? Listen to this.
We talked about the way parents of children were treated, because they were concerned over what was being taught in school. Senator Kennedy just went through that with you. You applied domestic terrorism as a term in couching that activity. Now, under federal law, which you have cited, this is how you term domestic terrorism, and I'm quoting, activities that involve acts dangerous to human life that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state. So under that definition, would you agree that firebombing a crisis pregnancy center constitutes an act of domestic terrorism?
I would say yes, but I want to again disagree with your earlier characterizations. There was no memorandum about parents complaining to their school boards, and there was
talking about firebombing pregnancy
centers. I understand, and there was no reference in that memo to using domestic terrorism.
Firebombing where domestic terrorism.
It's at least domestic violent extremism.
Okay, so then let's talk about the far left group Jane's Revenge, because they claimed responsibility for that. They went so far as to spray paint their name on the wall. So do you intend to prosecute them?
We intend, if we find them, to do that. There is
so you can't find them.
If you have information about those groups, we would be happy to.
That is your job.
It's your job, not my job. Look, these people left their calling card. They signed their name. They said, hey, we did it. Yeah, Jane's Revenge did it. Well, you know, they don't have a headquarters. How are we going to find? You're the FBI, or the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Come on now. Well, the Department of Justice. Look, if this was on a synagogue, I don't want to see this anywhere, right? If it was on a temple, if it was any other place but a pro-life center, you know, and as many attacks as we have seen, like I said, there have been 87 attacks on pro-life centers, 130 attacks on Catholic churches. If it was anywhere else, I guarantee you there would have been an arrest. They would have tracked down those people in a heartbeat. But this goes to this runs diametric to their ideology. They want this culture of death to continue in our country. You can call a parent a domestic terrorist, but you're not calling somebody who firebombs a clinic, signs their name to it, a domestic terrorist. Well, you know, they are, but, you know, if you know where they are, well, we'll go get them. But, you know, we you know, they did it at night, and, you know, we're afraid of the dark. I mean, come on. I mean, they sound like a bunch of children. Like I said, it wasn't an easy day for Merrick Garland. I just say thank God he's not on the Supreme Court. He was up. Thank God that never went through, right? Let's thank God for the small blessings that we do have. I need to take a short pause. Just wanted to give you a taste of what happened yesterday on Capitol Hill. And really, I've been talking about a lot of these issues. I'm glad to hear so many different senators pressing those in charge for answers. Maybe it'll hold them a little more accountable, or at least they'll think twice the next time before something like this happens. Want to fill you in on a story you might need to know. I don't know whether you have children, or you are pregnant, or your kids are having kids, or maybe it's grandkids. I don't know what your nieces or nephews. I just saw a report that the food that your baby is supposed to eat that's healthy, it may not be so healthy. There's a report out. There may be heavy metals in that food. I'll tell you all about it when I return.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Your news, your issues, your opinion. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Just trying to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else on the home front. If you've got a baby, maybe a grandbaby, niece or nephew, pay attention to this story. You know, what you give them, especially what they eat, it's supposed to be nourishing. Right? It's supposed to keep them healthy. You certainly don't want them to have heavy metals. I saw a story that Bloomberg Law recently brought 33 different baby food products, right? They bought these different baby foods. They sent them to the labs just to be tested. What they found was absolutely appalling. All of the products except for one, okay? I had 33 of them. All of them but one contained at least two of three different kinds of heavy metals. Now, my son now is fostering a young baby. He's only a year old. I got to tell them. He makes a lot of the food. They make their baby food. But what they found was lead, mercury, cadmium. I mean, this is stuff, these products. And by the way, the baby food was labeled organic. The organic food had high levels, high concentrations of metals. And of course, the problem with heavy metals, you say, well, why should I be concerned? Yeah, because it affects cognitive functions, right, of the kids. They interfere with the brain. They give the baby, giving it to the babies whose brains are growing at a significant rate can cause serious problems for them. Joining me today to take a look at the issues, Katie Talento. She's executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. You can find this group. They're a good group at ahcsm.org. Again, that's Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Katie, thank you for joining us today. Good afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for talking about this important topic.
Yeah, unbelievable story. When I saw it, I thought, you know, people need to know. I was, you know, what my first reaction was, well, what about oversight? I thought the FDA would have governed this. I mean, what's happening with the FDA, and why aren't they exercising on what baby food companies are manufacturing? Shouldn't they be doing something?
Yeah, that seems like a very reasonable question. We've all been asking that question for the past 3 years about the FDA's oversight process in a number of areas, haven't we? I mean, I think that really all you can say at this point is that the FDA has declared a war on babies. Between this complete lack of oversight and just total lack of urgency about this problem, but also, you know, they recently approved the COVID vaccine for babies on the basis of zero data in babies and only 8 mice in slightly older children. There's still a formula shortage for moms and dads who are using formula. And of course, they now are having abortion pills be
right
available at CVS and Walgreens, right, you know, and Rite Aid on the corner store. So this is just the latest in a series of crimes against babies. And I, you know, it's hard to know whether the FDA is trying to protect these babies or they're, you know, according to their mission, or whether they're really just in the tank for these corporate interests. If you ask them, you know, why aren't they toughening the standards on these products with respect to these heavy metals and setting the standards for how much heavy metal is allowed to be in baby food, what they'll say is, well, it's really hard for these corporations and manufacturers to, you know, to comply with tougher standards. And we don't want these products to be off the market. you know, I'm a grandmother, I'm a mother. I want them off the market. Amen. If they're poisoning my children with heavy metals. Amen. I think we'd rather have no car at all than a car that doesn't have brakes.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I view this.
So true.
So, yeah, it's really scary, Drew.
That's such a great point. And, you know, I got to commend you, too, on your point. I saw that the FDA is restricting Xanax for people who need it right now, but not the abortion pill. You'll wonder where the priorities are on all of this. I don't know who has oversight over the FDA. Can they be forced to improve their oversight on what's happening here? And what should parents do? Even if the stuff says organic, you immediately think, oh, there's no metals in this. It's good for my kids. So two things. What can parents do, and how can we hold the FDA accountable?
Yeah, I'll start with your second question. So the FDA is overseen by the Secretary of HHS of Health and Human Services, which is a cabinet official. But the cabinet official right now in the Biden administration is a radical pro-abortion activist. So I don't think he has the best interests of babies in his heart of hearts. And there are committees of Congress that oversee the FDA. And right now in the House, they are starting to investigate the FDA in a number of areas. I don't think that anyone's interested in this except some Democrats, actually. There were some Democrat congressmen who have tried to introduce a bill in the past and have been carrying out investigations of this very issue, and their bill died in committee. So I'm hopeful that this is not a partisan issue. I'm hopeful that, you know, parents of all stripes, political stripes, want their babies free from lead and arsenic and cadmium and mercury. So I think really the only thing to do is to call members of Congress and ask for them to take a stand on this.
Yeah,
your first question. I mean, what can parents do and grandparents? So the way that these metals are getting into a lot of the food has to do with the water sources that's being used. A lot of the foods that are contaminated are those rice foods, the kind of food that you give your baby as you're weaning the baby off of formula or breast milk and onto solid foods. And they have these like rice cereals and oat cereals that are these transition foods. And, you know, 80% of babies have had this kind of rice exposure before their first birthday. And so it's really important, I think, for parents to recognize that it's not that the rice or the cereal is contaminated in the process of manufacturing. It's contaminated in the water that's used to grow the rice. So the only way for some of these manufacturers to protect their food products is to actually move to a different water source. Some of these companies have actually picked up and moved from where they were to a different state where there's a better water source. And that may be what we have to do. And the only thing that's going to make that happen and make companies take this seriously is if the FDA changes its standards. So for parents, they need to think about, can I make my own transition foods? And can I use foods that aren't, including rice and other products that are grown in water? The really safest, best thing to do is stick with breast milk as long as you can.
Yeah. Hey, do you envision lawsuits in the days ahead as a result of this, or months ahead, years ahead?
I hope there will be some. There have already been a few lawsuits around some FDA standards with respect to the autism community, because we do know there's very clear evidence that heavy metal exposure does contribute to the development of disorders on the autism spectrum. Wow. And so, you know, this is really critical that parents take it seriously. You know, there's a reason that God made moms perfectly capable of feeding their children, but there are some moms that can't. And so for those moms, you know, I'd encourage them to make their own food. You don't have to have transitional food. You can just blend up real food and just give blended up chicken, blended up corn to your baby. It's totally fine. So I'd go in that direction rather than these manufactured transition foods.
Well, let's do this. I only have a couple minutes. Let's grab a call or two for you. If you want to join us, it's 888-914-9149. We'll go to Maine first. What a beautiful state. Megan, good afternoon. You're on the air with Katie Talento.
Thanks, Drew. I totally agree. Maine's gorgeous. Wanted to mention to parents, I have a 10-month-old. When my 6-month-old, when he was 6 months, we went to the pediatrician, and she said, are you doing rice cereal? They're very pushy about this. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, I just started, but why is it so important? Like, can I just blend up oatmeal and get his grains that way? And she said, yes, but they've got iron in it, and it's so important for them to get iron. You can do iron drops, but it's kind of a pain. Yeah. Just do rice cereal. Well, I caught wind of this story a few months back, probably like 6.5 months, when he was 6.5 months.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to do the iron drops. And turns out it's totally feasible. Parents, you can do this. Iron drops, you can grab them on Amazon. And definitely do that instead. And like your speaker was saying, blend your own baby food, freeze it. It's easy.
Bravo.
It really is.
Megan, thank you for your call. I'm sure a lot of parents appreciate your input. Katie, I only have about a moment or two left. Let me give you a final thought. You heard Megan, and maybe if people want more information on the story, you have a resource you can direct them to.
Yeah, I mean, that Megan is exactly right. And she's representative of all these patriot moms out there. We're perfectly capable of taking care of our babies without advice from the FDA. We know what to do, and we can get creative and help each other. So I would just turn to your own food that you're going to eat for dinner, blend it up. That's if you can't rely on anything else that the drug that these manufacturers are making for your baby, blend up your own food and keep your baby. I mean, her baby shouldn't have been. She shouldn't have been pressured at 6 months old to be taking her baby off breast milk and put onto these manufactured foods. Moms need to trust their instincts and trust their bodies.
Well, Katie, we'll have to have you back. I really enjoyed our time together. Thanks for your patience today, and keep up your good work there. People want more information. I'm assuming it's AHCSM, Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Best way to get a hold of you?
That's exactly right. Thank you.
All right. Check it out, AHCSM.org. You can check it out. It's Katie Talenza. She's executive director. I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, I need to change gears. Have you heard about Paris Hilton and what she's doing? Unbelievable story here. You know, she's into designer handbags, right? All sorts of fashion. How about a designer baby? Wait till you hear what she has done. This is an amazing story. Honestly, it deserves far more time than I'm going to be able to give it today. But we'll dive into it right after this.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Pray, hope, and don't worry. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Yeah, we'll certainly pray if you want to join us. You know the number, right? It's 888-914-9149. Feel free to dial in. You can also send us your prayer intentions. I'm going to be speaking first to one of my favorite guests, Dr. Charles Camosi. He's going to be stopping by. But let me tell you what's happening very quickly, and we'll dive into this. This is a topic that really deserves maybe an hour conversation. We have a little, just a few minutes today to get into it, but I think it's worth discussing. Paris Hilton, right? You know her. Remember from the reality show she's been in? She's the great-granddaughter of Conrad Hilton, the founder of the Hilton Hotels. Other than her family name, she has no real claim to fame, right? She doesn't act. She doesn't sing. She doesn't really run the family business. She's a socialite. It became popular really at 16, going around to nightclubs. And she got in because of her fake ID and probably who she was. But after going through a series of boyfriends and engagements, she finally got married to a businessman at the end of 2021. And in January, they came out with a whole bunch of embryos. They did this through in vitro fertilization, and they have 20 embryos, 20 to be exact. And she doesn't want to bring any of them to gestation. You know why? And this is kind of weird too. They're all boys. They're all boys. And since she already has a boy, she now wants a girl. So she isn't going to get pregnant. You know, if she's not going to get pregnant with a girl, it would ruin her image and her looks. So she says if she can get a girl through in vitro, she'll have her gestated through another surrogate mother. She won't even carry it. Somebody else will carry the baby. You know, you talk about designer babies, designer handbags. You know, I want the child, but I don't want anything that comes along with it, right? Unfortunately, Paris Hilton has made herself, I think, into an object lesson in how to not conceive children, right? And how not to bring them into this world. But I think a lot of Catholics are confused on this issue, too. Some who think that, you know, things like in vitro fertilization and surrogacy are okay. That's really not how God, you know, ordained it. But here to talk about it is Dr. Charles Camosi, a professor of Christian ethics at Creighton University School of Medicine in Phoenix. He is also the Monsignor Kern Fellow in Moral Theology at St. Joseph Seminary in New York, and it's a privilege to have him back with me. Hey, Dr. Camosi, thank you for your time and for your patience today. It's great to talk with you.
Hey, Drew. It's glad to be back again.
So let's, you know, on this issue, and doctor, I'd love to have you back when we can maybe spend an hour together and unpack a lot of things. I was talking with one of my producers this morning, in fact, about you, and I said, oh, I love having him on. Another conversation we can have is the fact that I know you believe that we're going to be getting to euthanize people with dementia, or how close we're getting to that. I'd love to get your take on that. But let's talk in vitro today, and maybe let's start with some church teaching. For those who may not know, they think, hey, it's fine. What does the church teach, and what are the principles behind whether or not this is moral or not?
Well, one of the things when I saw this story a few days ago, I thought immediately was, man, oh man, Humanae Vitae, the church's teaching and all this stuff just becomes so more and more important, more and more relevant every day, it seems. And here's the basic teaching, right? I think most of us know that sex needs to be open to procreation. That's what I think many people think about, the connection between sex and openness to procreation. It works that way. But openness to procreation is also connected to sex, right? That's the other side of that coin, right? So, and that comes from the church's teaching that both sex and the gift of children are, in fact, gifts. They're not things that we're owed. They're not things that ought to be purchased on a marketplace via surrogates or via fertility clinics or something like that. And it was very interesting for you to use the language of object, right? Paris Hilton, her entire life, has been an object herself. She's understood herself that way. She's understood other people that way. So it's, of course, no surprise, and she's not alone in this by any stretch of the imagination, that she sees her children also as objects to be purchased, have quality control over them. Like, oh, yes, I've had my boy. Now it's time for me to have a girl, right? So, and I, unfortunately, all these little babies I've created are all boys. They're not what I want. So, of course, I'm going to do what I want and purchase a girl on the open marketplace. But that's, of course, not how any of this works.
Yeah. And I think it's a slippery slope. As you begin having children this way, then why not, you know, mess with the genome? Why not just say, I want a blue-eyed baby, or I want a 6'3", you know, boy or a man with, you know, blue eyes and black hair, whatever your thing is, right? I mean, this is really very... it's very dangerous territory. The other end of this too, and we can talk a little bit about what's happening in between here, are all these 20 embryos. What happens to them? They're frozen. Is it, you know, many times they get destroyed in the end. The parent doesn't want the child. Can they be adopted? What about the morality of that for parents who want to have a child? Maybe take us down that lane.
Yeah, well, that itself could be a whole semester-long course. But I was recently speaking at the Catholic Medical Association's annual meeting. We had this is a bunch of very, very Orthodox, very, very Catholic folks. And we had a formal debate about this. Some people think you shouldn't be able to adopt embryos. I think you should be able to adopt embryos. This is an ongoing debate among faithful people in the church. But you're right to point this out. I mean, talk about throwaway culture, something that the Holy Father warns us about all the time. This is what's going on here. It's throwaway culture, right? She gets, again, it's very closely related to the consumer culture I mentioned before. She gets to pick and choose who she wants, right? And then she rejects those that she doesn't want. And those are most likely not going to be adopted. Most likely they'll become medical waste, or they'll be killed via experimental stem cell research. And of course, it's, you know, that's a culture of death, sure. But it's very interesting, I think, to think about it as throwaway culture. It's just kind of this added thing we don't normally think about. We want to look the other way. But that's throwaway culture on steroids for sure.
Yeah, I know someone who's adopted embryos, and I wasn't sure, you know, what the ethics of that were, but I kind of share your view. I think it's a noble thing rather than let them stay and, you know, stay frozen or worse, discarded. You know, maybe give them that life. But we should have you back to talk more about that. I know we have limited time, so let me ask you one other thing, and I'll take a few calls. If you want to join us, we have a few minutes with the doctor. 888-914-9149. You'll have to call now to get in, though. Surrogacy. You know, Paris Hilton doesn't want to carry the baby. You know, she has these children through in vitro, and she says she'll have a surrogate mother carry this child. What are the ethics surrounding surrogacy? Are they vague? Are they pretty clear? In case of Paris Hilton, it may be one thing. What about a mother who, you know, whose life would be compromised if she was to try to carry a child to term?
There are so many things to say about this, and most of them are not good. But let me just say one thing that's good here, and I'll say this as a father who has three adopted children, and then also a surprise biological child after we thought we were infertile.
That's awesome.
The pain of infertility is real, right? I mean, that is a profound thing. And we tell people in our culture, right, to work hard, have your fun, get that first house. And then you end up in your early 30s, mid 30s, and especially for women, that's a very difficult time to think about having children. It's almost too late for many of them. And so there's this kind of desperation people feel. There's the real goodness, right, to want to welcome children into one's life. And this is not the way to do it. But that's that good impulse, that good desire is something we ought to make more real earlier, right, in marriages and in our lives. But the thing not to do is to farm this out again in a kind of consumer culture. One of the things that's interestingly has happened in places like India and other developing world areas is they've said, no more. We're not going to allow you to use our women as surrogates, in part because what these fertility companies do is they look for the cheapest women possible to use. So you get your surrogate overseas, or you get your surrogate from somebody who's in a desperate situation who needs the money. This is the classic example of coercion or economic exploitation. So it's the most vulnerable, of course, who end up carrying the babies for rich people like Paris Hilton, who can't be bothered, right, to carry her own child. And I mean, and then there's other dramatic things that happen. So for instance, you have to have a contract about these things. What if the child has Down syndrome? I just saw a story about this the other day. Some people try to build into their contract, because again, they want quality control over this. They say, well, if you have a child with Down syndrome, we want you to have an abortion. And sometimes somebody will sign the contract, sometimes they won't. Sometimes they sign the contract and they change their mind. They can't imagine killing this child that's inside of them, because in a very real sense, that surrogate is the mother of the child, right? Because boy, we're learning more and more interesting things about the relationship between the mother and the child, and the kind of cells that they kind of exchange between each other, they form the placenta together. They actually create an organ together. They have an impossibly intimate relationship. Wow. So yeah, there's just so much going on there.
On the other side of this too, this child is now born. It comes to life, right? What does this very warped way of viewing children in our culture today do to that child growing up, knowing that it was the product of, you know, a test tube or a petri dish, that it was in vitro, it wasn't made in a unitive fashion? Does it have any effect or not? I don't know. Maybe you can't answer that.
Well, I mean, there's data to show that overall in our culture, for sure, children and young people have levels of anxiety and depression way beyond anything that we had when we were growing up, thank God.
Right.
And it's related to this fact, I think, that more and more children think of themselves as their parents' projects, right? Mm-hmm. There's this intense pressure to kind of perform for the parents' desires that they have for them. And this is the logical extension of that, right? This is a straight up no chaser project. And of course, you have multiple mothers, right? There was a mother who gestated me. There's possibly a mother whose egg was donated. There's a mother who had the project, literally, that put this in place, in this case, Paris Hilton. And what you got is, again, then this feeling, of course, because that's exactly what happened, that this person brought me into existence as part of a project. And I have value to them for what they can produce for me, not just as a gift, right? We don't think of these children as gifts, because they don't come to us as gifts. They come to us as products that we purchase in a marketplace. So rather than the unconditional love that we should offer children, which is the kind of unconditional love we have in response to a gift from God, we instead have, frankly, conditional love, right? Which is, okay, you have Down syndrome, you're done. Goodbye. Oh, you don't have the kind of hair or the kind of skin. I mean, you mentioned this earlier, Drew. This is not just the dystopian future. It's here now. When you pick your egg donor that you want, you can ask for a certain SAT score, a certain hair color, were they a varsity athlete? So this is something that people are already doing to try to put together their projects and get the quality control that they want.
Hey, Dr. Kamosi, people want to follow you, your writing. What's the best way to do that?
You can either go to my website, charleskamosi.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. It's probably the best way, at C. Kamosi.
At C. Kamosi. That's C-A-M-O-S-Y. Check him out on Twitter. Let's have you back. I know we just scratched the surface of this. We should really go a lot deeper, but thank you for your time. I always appreciate your writing and your insight. I'll be right back.